But when I really start to pull the threads of what's happening, you end up going in an entirely different direction. You end up learning something completely different than what you initially kind of sought out to teach, which I'm just really interested about this one. So today we'll read from Psalm 34, which is actually a really interesting psalm because it's David wrote this psalm right after he pretended to be crazy for the king of Achish to escape away from him because he knew he was, you know, going to get turned over to Saul. He was on the run from Saul at the time. We'll go ahead and pray to open up, and then we'll read. We'll pray for the elements, and then I'll launch right into it. All right. So today we're going to be in Judges chapter 11. Jephthah's story goes through chapter 11 and halfway into chapter 12. I'm going to kind of just give the background to it, and then when we get to the really impactful stuff, not to say that any one part is more important, but when we get to the really impactful stuff, I want to, then I'm going to read from it. So, like I said, going into it, you kind of named it, you know, fear of the Lord, right? And we'll see later on that Jephthah makes a huge mistake. He ends up giving an oath that he should have never given, ever. But we'll just launch right into it here. Jephthah's mother was a prostitute. His father was named Gilead. Now, he was married, right? So he was doing the wrong thing. And eventually, when Gilead's wife, who isn't named, ends up having children, you know, other sons, they drive him out. Like when they all get older, they drive him out. And they tell him straight up, we're not going to share an inheritance with you. You don't share a mother with us. So we're not going to share our father's inheritance with you. They literally drive him out. Gone. So Jephthah takes off, fleeing his brothers. He ends up in the land of Tob, which is east of the Jordan River. And what it says there in the Bible is that he ends up banding together with, and if the Bible calls you a worthless man, you know, then you earn that moniker, if you will, you know, because there's a lot of people that did a lot of bad things, and they weren't called worthless. I mean, you know, think about even David did some horrible things, but he wasn't called worthless. He was called a man after God's own heart, right? So you know that these guys are definitely at least a rough crowd of people that are, well, worthless, right? What ends up happening is he actually goes out with these guys raiding. Now, we all know raiding is not a good thing. Nobody ever went raiding, you know, to go plant trees or something else like that. They went raiding, obviously, for ill-gotten gains, we'll say. And Jephthah was actually leading them, which will tell you something about his prowess in combat. You, in order to lead a group of people like that, you need to be, you know, what they used to say, to be the man, you got to beat the man, right? You know, so that's who Jephthah was, and everybody knew it. So eventually, Ammon ends up making war with Israel. The Ammonites were a ancient Semitic nomadic people. They descended from Lot, and they were closely related to the Israelites and the Moabites. They dwelled in the Jordan River and the Dead Sea, and they frequently clashed with Israel because they were worshiping the gods of Molech and Milcom. These are the ones that stayed behind. Instead of going across with Moses and the rest, they stayed behind because they liked it on that side of the river. And they asked Moses. And initially Moses was like, no, you need to stay with the tribe. I mean, there's a lesson in there of staying with the tribe and not trying to go out and do your own thing, because you become more susceptible to, you know, the nations around you, to the worship around you. When you leave and you take off, you become more susceptible to those types of things. So what ends up happening is they go and they're like, okay, we're in some trouble. Let's go get Jephthah. We know Jephthah knows how to fight. Let's go to the land of Tob and get him to help us fight the Ammonites. And of course, when they get there, Jephthah starts asking what I feel is some very fair questions. Oh, now, because you know I know how to fight, you're going to come get me. Is that what you're going to do here? So he actually ends up working his way, not just to become the commander, because of course he's, you know, will you be the commander? You come before us and help us fight. And he goes, no, if I'm going to come help you, I'm not just going to be the commander. I'm going to be in charge of you. I'm going to be the commander of the people. This is ultimately how he becomes the judge. And they accept it and they do what's known as a mizpah, right? Which is basically an agreement that they made between them using God as a witness. So yes, God is our witness. If you come and you help us fight the Ammonites and get rid of them, then yes, you can be in charge of everybody. And he accepts. So one of his first things that he does, and it's a pretty smart thing to do, is he ends up sending a letter to the commander of the Ammonites. And he asks them basically, okay, what are you declaring war for? What's the problem? Why is this happening? It's a pretty level-headed thing to do. So he sends that letter to them and they send a letter back. He claims that Israel has stolen their lands. You've stolen our lands and we want our lands back and you need to give them back peaceably. And of course, Jephthah writes another letter to them and he explains, first things first, that was 300 years ago. You've had more than 300 years to right this wrong, and now you're suddenly picking a time and you're accusing us of having done the wrong thing. Not to mention the way that entire conflict went down is they were trying to just travel across these people's lands just to get back to their lands. They weren't there to make war or anything else like that. They simply just wanted to pass through. They ended up asking the Moabites, hey, we just want to pass through your land. The Moabites were like, nah. They asked the Edomites, hey, we just want to go through your land. And of course, the Edomites were like, no. Well, finally, they get to the Ammonites and they're like, listen, we just want to get across to our land. And the Ammonites did something completely different. Not only did they say no, but then they turned around and attacked them. Well, you could imagine the logic behind that. Well, you guys are stuck out here. We got you. So why don't we just go ahead and conquer them and be done with them, done with these Israelites? But that's not how it happened. God, of course, delivered the Israelites, you know, delivered the Ammonites into the Israelites' hands. And what did they do? Well, when you conquer a land, it's your land now. It's the rule of war. So now, of course, 300 years later, he's talking about, I mean, don't you hear that today? We literally, and I love that, you know, again, Solomon saying that there's nothing new under the sun because there isn't. These people 300 years later are talking about give us our land back that they lost because they were aggressive in the first place. We see that even today, nothing new under the sun. So, of course, they routed them. And what I like, though, and we're going to start at verse 23. I want to read Jephthah's response to all of this, right? Because it's really well thought out. I mean, you can see he's just trying to logistically deal with these people. So 23, now since the Lord, the God of Israel, has driven the Amorites out before his people Israel, what right do you have to take it over? 24, will you not take what your God Chemosh gives you? I love that. I love that. That's incredible. What a response. The Lord gave us this land and it's our land now. If Chemosh was all that, then you could have what he gives you. But the Lord gave us this land. Likewise, whatever the Lord has given us, we will possess. You know, again, Jephthah also goes in to point out, again, this was 300 years ago. And of course, verse 28 says, the king did not listen to anything Jephthah had sent to him. And that's where war broke out. You know, you could imagine the frustration of trying to logically deal with and reasonably deal with somebody who's being aggressive, and they're just so unreasonable, and they're just not going to listen, and they just don't care, and they're set on this, and they're set on that, and that's all there is to it. It becomes very frustrating. It becomes downright infuriating if you've ever had to deal with somebody who they just going to have it their way, and that's it. That's very frustrating to deal with, and I'm sure we all have people like that in our lives. So, it'll make you so angry and so crazy that you're barely thinking anymore. You know, you can see where Jephthah starts to get really mad. So here is ultimately where he makes a massive mistake. One of the most, in my opinion, one of the most tragic mistakes in the entire Bible. Starting at verse 29, then the Spirit of the Lord came on Jephthah. He crossed the Gilead and Manasseh, passed through Mizpah of Gilead, and from there he advanced against the Ammonites. 30, and Jephthah made a vow to the Lord. You have to watch what you say to the Lord. If you give the Ammonites into my hands, 31, whatever comes out of the door of my house to meet me when I return in triumph from the Ammonites will be the Lord's, and I will sacrifice it as a burnt offering. Now, the Lord is already with him. But in that moment, in that anger, in that want and need for conquest to just deal with these unreasonable people, he ends up making a very rash oath, a vow. Now, let's remember that, you know, you can't make a deal with the Lord, right? You can't make a deal with him. You literally can't make the Lord do what you want. That's not possible. You know, you're making this deal. Well, guess what? You're the only one that has to hold up your end, because the Lord doesn't deal with people like that. You can't manipulate him. He's not a genie that you rub the lamp or a quarter that you put into and hey, well, Lord, you know, if you'll go ahead and, you know, allow me to get this better job, then I'll stop drinking. And then you get the job, and what do? Nah. Exactly. So now you've made a deal that you shouldn't have done in the first place, and you've broken it. There's going to be consequences. There always is. And you may not feel those consequences right away, but you will. I know I have. So starting up at 32, oh, excuse me. Sorry, I lost my place there. Starting at 32. Then Jephthah went over to fight the Ammonites, and the Lord gave them into his hands. He devastated 20 towns from Aroer to the vicinity of Minnith, as far as Abel Keramin. Thus Israel subdued Ammon. 34. When Jephthah returned home in Mizpah, who should come out to meet him but his daughter? Dancing to the sound of timbrels, she was his only child. Except for her, he had neither son nor daughter. 35, when he saw her, he tore his clothes and cried, oh no, my daughter, you have brought me down and I am devastated. I have made a vow to the Lord that I cannot break. Well, now you're blaming her for a rash vow that you made. Now we're just lashing out at your own daughter, who has obviously no idea what it is that you actually vowed. You know, if you think about how rash this vow actually is, what did you think was going to come out of the front door of your house? Did you think some cow was just going to stroll out there like, hey, I'm ready to be sacrificed. Hey, boss. Of course, the first thing that's going to come out of your house is your children. You come home from work, your children are there. That's the first thing that comes out the house. But he wasn't thinking. He made a rash vow, and in that very moment, he understood what that vow truly meant. Impulse. Excellent. So at 36, and I love this too, because Jephthah's daughter, you know, this is a woman of God right here. She says, "My father," she replied, "you've given your word to the Lord. Do to me just as you promised. Now that the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the Ammonites." In 37, "but grant me this one request," she said. "Grant me 2 months to roam the hills and weep with my friends because I will never marry." 38, "you may go," he said. And he let her go for 2 months. She and her friends went into the hills and wept because she would never marry. 39, "after the 2 months, she returned to her father and he did to her as he vowed. And she was a virgin." You know, sometimes even to this day, the Israelites have a tradition and they call it Arbat Yamim. And it's known as the 4 days where they will roam for a few days to mourn Jephthah's daughter. See, there's a lot of people that like to say, they're like, "well, no, he didn't actually sacrifice her. You know, he gave her to the temple," kind of like what happened with Samuel, right? It's not what it says. He did exactly as he vowed. I want to take a moment here because what I started out, you know, wanting to teach about today was the fear of the Lord and doing what you say you're going to do. But it hit me, and I realized after doing some studying and some researching that the real lesson here is that we need to know our Bibles. Because in the Levitical law, a rash vow was covered. He never had to do that to his daughter. He did not have to sacrifice her. 2 months she roamed around, and instead of turning to God for the answers, instead of turning to the priest, he's the leader. He's the physical leader. At any point, he could have went to the priest and said, "hey, is there some way, is there something in the law that we could do so I do not have to do this horrible thing?" And it turns out there was. See, I started this out thinking we're going to talk about fear of the Lord. And of course, you fear the Lord. Even Jesus himself told us, don't fear man that can kill your body. Fear the one that can throw you in hell for eternity. That's who you should be afraid of. But he had a way to not sacrifice his daughter. And instead, he just chose to block it all out and just steam right through it. If you'll turn with me to Leviticus 5, verse 4 through 6, and I'll give you a moment to get there. We're going to read that if he knew his own laws at the time, those were the laws, and it applies to us today. If we know our Bible, then we have the answers for anything that we run across. But if you don't know your Bible, then you end up making rash decisions. And I'll start here at verse 4. "Or if a person swears, speaking thoughtlessly with his lips to do evil or to do good, whatever it is that a man may pronounce by an oath, and he is unaware of it, when he realizes it, then he shall be guilty in any of these matters. And it shall be, when he is guilty in any of these matters, that he shall confess that he has sinned in that thing, and he shall bring his trespass offering to the Lord for his sin, which he has committed, a female from the flock, a lamb or a kid of goats, as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for him concerning his sin. Once again, instead of turning to the Lord, instead of turning to his own laws, instead of turning to his own priests, which God gave them to deal with situations like this, he sacrificed his own daughter. If that's not a lesson in knowing your Bible, I don't know what is. You know, it also makes me incredibly grateful that we live under grace. Because they, you know, again, the law brings death, does it not? This is literally the very epitome of that statement. The law brings death. Nobody can live underneath it. So what I started out with is not where I ended. We need to know our Bibles. We need to know how to deal with the situations through a biblical lens. You know, now this is not in the Bible, but the rabbis in their own, you know, literature and you know, stuff that they wrote down throughout the years. Again, this is not in the Bible, but this is just something for historical context. They said that Jephthah, because of what he did, because of course it was against Levitical law, human sacrifice was against Levitical law. You're not allowed to sacrifice humans. It's written. You can't do that. So they say that over the 6 years that he reigned as a judge, he rotted away physically. Probably through leprosy or some other curse. You know, I should have looked it up, but I'm assuming that there's probably a curse that the Lord puts on you for human sacrifice. Now, again, that's an assumption. I should have looked that up and I didn't. I'm going to make sure I take a look at that later. But according to their spoken written history, he suffered, rotted away, and died after 6 years. So you'll notice with the judges that the more just of the judges, the better they did, the longer they ruled. Conversely, the worse they did, the shorter their reign was. You can see that through all the judges throughout the book. So we have to know our Bibles. We have to know our laws. I'm going to just quickly summarize chapter 12, where it states, you know, Jephthah ends up winning and sacrificing his daughter and doing all that. Then the men from Ephraim, who he had called to help him fight against the Ammonites, and they were like, "Ah, we're not doing that. We're not going to help you." Well, now they're mad because they didn't show up, but they didn't get any glory. They didn't get any spoils. They didn't get anything else like that. And now they're mad. So they show up to Jephthah's house and they tell him, "Because you didn't call on us." And he's like, "I did call on you. We're going to burn your house down with you in it." He ends up fighting the people of Ephraim, and he beats them too. He rules for 6 years, and then that's it. This is not just some old book. This is not just some, you know, it's known as the sword for a reason. If you learn anything from Jephthah, know this Bible, live in it. It'll help you through your whole life. Thank you, guys. Is there any questions or corrections?